Mail goes nowhere without mail handlers and carriers. The Postal Service has hundreds of thousands of such employees in several unions. For many, it's a lifetime job. At headquarters, ensuring the vitality of this workforce falls to the USPS Chief Human Resources Officer, Jeff Williamson. He explains the scope of the work.
So we are responsible for all employee-related policy, labor relations, compensation, benefits, and engagement for all 630,000 postal employees.
And it's interesting, the labor relations. My understanding is that in general, they're pretty good at Postal Service. What are the big issues in labor management with respect to, say, the letter carriers and the union employees?
We have four large unions. We have two letter carrier crafts, our city carriers as well as our rural carriers, and then we have our clerks, our American Postal Workers, and our mail handler unions. They all bring different issues. However, over the last few years, we've actually built a very strong relationship with our unions and are in the midst of collective bargaining with three right now and just secured a ratified contract with our rural contract for the first time in over 20 years.
How many people altogether is that? Just refresh our memory.
Our craft runs a little over 450,000 career, and then we have another 100,000 non-career employees that the unions govern.
I didn't realize there's a difference between the urban and the non-urban or rural. Is there an actual difference in the job?
It's slightly different. I mean, delivery is delivery. However, in the city, delivery typically high-rise, more urban area, whereas rural traditionally has been longer routes, people in vehicles that could traverse as much as 100 miles or as little as 40, depending on the day. So the delivery is pretty much the same. However, some of the demands of the job are a little different.
And does the Postal Service have to recruit people for these craft jobs, or do people come to you?
Well, a little bit of both. We have a strong career workforce, and it's been a fantastic job for many people for decades. So we have a lot of demand seeking employment for the Postal Service. However, in certain locations where the employment is a little bit tighter, we do recruit. We recruit right out of college, right out of high school. We recruit a lot of military. So we do have active recruiting efforts going on an ongoing basis.
And what kind of training and development is required for someone to become a carrier? One of the craft type jobs.
It's actually quite extensive. You wouldn't quite realize it, when it comes right down to, you see there are vehicles on the road, right-hand drive. So we put them through extensive carrier academies to teach somebody how to drive a vehicle in this country with the steering wheel on the right-hand side, as well as the demands. When you think about, the different products and services that we offer, as well as the demand of how do you receive your mail in the office in the morning, put it in, the vehicle, and then actually traverse your route. Not to mention, obviously, the safety components with, ensuring that you fulfill your duties on a daily basis, in the most utmost safe way.
A few years ago, there was a spate of incidents involving carriers after dark in certain parts of the country, certain neighborhoods. What is the trend of that kind of thing happening? Some attacks, really. Right. Is that on the rise? Is it leveled off? Was that just a cluster of incidents that really wasn't a trend?
For us, I think safety is always a top priority. And when you think about the demands of having 200,000 plus employees on the street every day, six, sometimes 7 days a week, these incidents unfortunately do happen. But our carriers are trained. They're trained as to how to respond. The most important thing that we train our carriers on is situational awareness, whether that's at 8 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Understand your surroundings. Understand how to be safe as you go about your duties. And then the most important thing for all of our employees is that they return safely at the end of the day.
So the folklore aside, the bigger danger is human beings as opposed to dogs.
Absolutely. Obviously, dogs are a big part of what we train our carriers on, how to protect themselves. This is where the American public can really help. Quite frankly, make sure your pets are secure on your property. As customers, you have a responsibility to help make sure that our carriers are safe as well. But it really depends. It depends on weather, depends on the geography and the terrain. Obviously, being out all day long, as far and as wide as we are, there are hazards that come along with the job. And we train our carriers to be very prudent, pay attention to their surroundings, and understand what to do to be safe. And that's their top priority.
We're speaking with Jeff Williamson, the Chief Human Resources Officer at the Postal Service. Now, one of the issues, not really a carrier issue or letter carrier issue, but a financial issue with respect to their long-term health care costs. This has been in the news over and over and over again, that contributes to those losses that the Postal Service incurs. And the Postal Service has been seeking legislative changes for a long time now, and somehow the conversation never seems to end. Right. So I guess that's a good sign with respect to Congress. What is it you need this year if you could have a perfect legislative package?
Wow, if I could pick it, it really comes down to four key things. And we've been true to these four items. The first does address some of our retiree health benefit issues. And it really allows the Postal Service, like any private company would do, is to fully integrate our retiree health care plans with Medicare, which would require Medicare to be the primary payer and our plans would be secondary. We can do that within the FEHB system. It's a plan that our unions have endorsed. It's also a plan that would allow our employees, the vast majority in retirement, to see lower costs out of pocket. And it would allow us to take advantage of being the second largest payer or the second highest contributor into Medicare over the last, 30 years. The second thing that's critically important to us is pension reform. Not so much changing the pensions and the benefits, but ensuring that OPM uses postal-specific demographics and assumptions when they calculate what our liability is. We believe as a self-sustaining and self-funding organization that our long-term liability should be based on the demographics of our workforce and the salary growth assumptions of our workforce, not of the rest of the federal government, because we are quite different. The third element is the pricing component. We just recently, unfortunately, had to roll back.
At 2 cents.
It was exactly a 4.3% exigent surcharge that was placed on all of our market-dominant products. The PRC required us to roll that back in last April. We're actually requesting that be reinstated. That's worth over $2 billion to us on an annual basis. And then the fourth piece, which again is critically important, as the market changes, as our demographics of our marketplace shift, is allowing us some additional product and service flexibilities. Today, we are somewhat constrained by law in terms of the products and services that we can offer.
And so you would offer, if you could...
Well, so we would look at, from a digital standpoint. Right now, we don't have the latitude to really innovate and offer different types of digital solutions, whereas under an expanded offering beyond just beyond core postal products, we would have the ability to enter different lines of business. And again, as we've seen 27% of our total volume decline, 35% of our first class, our most profitable product decline, any business who is self-sustaining would look at other avenues that are tangential to what we do, however, could offer us opportunities to grow revenue.
I want to get back to that question of the demographics of the craft force that is widely different right. from the rest of the federal government. What does it look like? How do you characterize it?
Well, there's a couple of different components to it. The primary one that changes the liability calculation really is the salary growth. Again, under a collective bargaining agreement, our salary growth trends are slightly different than what the rest of the federal government sees. The second element is when you think about the longevity and lifespan of employees and the different characteristics of an employee workforce in a more blue-collar environment, all we're asking for is that those demographics be taken into consideration when the calculations are being made.
When people join in the craft side of Postal Service, they tend to stay a long time?
Yeah, I mean, the average age of a career employee is roughly 50 years old. So it is not unusual for us to be giving out 40-year service awards, 45, even 50-year service awards in many cases. In fact, as our last collective bargaining agreement in 2010 created a pathway to career status for new employees that we hire, we have converted into career almost 35,000 employees just last year. So it's a way into a federal career that has long-term benefits and many stay for decades.
Let's switch gears now and talk about headquarters, management, technical employees that are not out there on the line. I think people sometimes forget Postal Service has those people and lots of them. What are your recruitment activities like for that end of the business?
We do extensive recruitment for more functional-based jobs, technical jobs. A classic example is we are a fantastic organization for industrial engineering. When you think about multiple type facilities, hundreds of facilities out there in a automated and in a mechanical way, we bring industrial engineers in. We hire, you know, right out of some of the most prestigious universities in the country, and they come right into an opportunity to look at lean techniques, work with Six Sigma activities in terms of projects, automation, and get some real hands-on experience on a scale that's hard to come by. In addition, you could look at HR within a functional HR organization, you know, as we hire people to come in and do recruiting, or we hire employees to come in and work on organizational effectiveness. Organizations the size and scale of ours create not only challenges but immense opportunities for people. The third element from a functional recruiting standpoint that we look at is we have an extensive leadership development program. And we believe on that. We believe that it's critically important not only to hire from the outside, but also to develop internally. So, if you come in as an industrial engineer, or you come in as an HR recruiter, you could have a path to an executive leadership team position in a different function because of our internal rotational programs. The way that we groom talent internally and build their leadership capability. So it offers immense capability from a career path standpoint.
About how many people do you take in a given year? Non-craft.
Non-craft. This coming year, we'll probably hire right around 1,000 to 1,200 into different roles. Again, we have management foundation programs where we're hiring this current class is roughly 60 right out of college to come into an 18-month management rotational program where they'll spend a little bit of time in IT, a little bit of time in HR, some time in finance, and then they'll outplace into a career position 18 months from now. And then again, as I said, we hire on a given year, you know, 50 to 100 industrial engineers, as well as the other functional needs that the organization has.
It must be a little difficult to describe what the Postal Service is, because on one hand, they're always saying we're not a federal agency, we're self-funded, but on the other hand, you can't do anything without Congress.
Right.
And the Postal Regulatory Commission. So it's really a hybrid kind of animal. How do you get people to get their heads around that idea?
I like to describe it as the best of both worlds, right? If you're up for a challenge, we have all the challenges of a private enterprise and a private business, and we have all the challenges of a government agency. We get to do it every day. So if you're up for opportunities to do things from a business standpoint on a large scale, you have them here. If you're interested in how politics influence government and government entities and some of the responsibilities that a government entity has, you have it here as well. So it really does run the gamut in terms of the day-to-day function of the organization. But we are that quasi sort of being pulled from both sides entity.
A lot of federal agencies, regular executive branch agencies, one of their big challenges is finding people that are qualified and skilled in federal procurement to work under the FAR and so forth and the Competition and Contracting Act. Postal Service has its own procurement system. Is that an issue for you also to find competent buyers?
Actually, no. It's been a challenge for us retaining some of our supply management experts. We have, again, as we go out and recruit, we recruit those in supply chain on an annual basis. We have extensive internal training. We also put them through other external training in order to bring up their proficiencies. We have a fantastic group here that does our procurement and supply management to the degree when you think about the contracts that they manage the scope, scale, and breadth of what they're involved in on an ongoing basis, they actually become extremely marketable skills. So as we, you know, look out into the future, we balance not only the immediate need to hire new talent with fresh skills, but also what are we doing to retain employees who have invested 5, 6, 10 years in some cases.
Now, many of the top executives at Postal Service, including the Postmaster General, have been here a long, long time. What about you?
I joined the Postal Service a little over 11 years ago.
So you're a newcomer.
So I'm a newcomer. I actually had double digits which is something that I'm actually very proud of, because I didn't think that I would make it that long, quite frankly. But I joined the organization for many of the same reasons that we just talked about. The opportunities that that you get when you come to an organization of this size and scale, if you're up for a challenge, there's plenty of them, and it's an organization that truly, truly is focused on its mission. And that's hard to say in many places, right? I mean, we get to come to work every day. I tell people I get up and I go to work, and I try to improve the lives of 600,000 people and then every customer that they touch, which is every American every day. You can't beat that.
We're speaking with Jeff Williamson, the Chief Human Resources Officer at the U.S. Postal Service. What is the performance management challenge? Because you have the craft, the 400,000 craft employees out there, then somebody's got to make sure they're performing properly. A wholly distinct, I guess, challenge from those that are not in the craft. So how do the management disciplines and the performance management tools get pushed down out to that furthest rural carrier?
So what we have is, from a management standpoint, we are governed by a pure pay-for-performance system. We have an extensive system that aligns the goals of right from our frontline supervisors and postmasters all the way up to the postmaster general. They're defined very specifically at both their local unit and then link as you move up to our corporate goals. That's what we use in terms of aligning your day-to-day function with the mission and purpose and strategy of the organization. So it's those frontline supervisors and those frontline management ranks who really on a day-to-day basis ensure that that our craft, whether you're a city carrier or you're a mail handler working in a plant, is focused on the right activities to drive the business result.
And, you know, the public probably interacts with the Postal Service more than with anyone else, right? That is federal, quasi-federal, whatever you want to call it. And so what's your message to the public that that you would like them to know about the Postal Service, that everyone brings their preconceptions to it?
Well, we are, again, when you talk about somewhat being misunderstood, we're an extremely technically capable organization. And when you think about the ability to walk down the street and drop a letter in a blue collection box and a couple days later have it go from Washington, D.C. to California, most don't really think about what goes into it. So, again, the message is we have 630,000 dedicated people every day, some that work on the street delivering your product, some that work in the back office processing, some that work in collection and receipt. But then you also have 50,000 plus management officials across the organization, frontline supervisors all the way up to, you know, your leadership team here at headquarters that work tirelessly to manage and maneuver this organization in that quasi-government world where we're self-sustaining, we're not appropriated, we don't receive taxpayer dollars to manage our operations, and we run it like a business, but we do it, we believe, in a very responsible way. And at the end, we are purely focused on the mission of delivering that product and connecting Americans coast to coast.
In those rotational assignments for people that come in newly to Postal, does that include maybe not a rotation, but at least an observation of the postal sorting operations, the real highly mechanized postal sorting centers, and also maybe getting out on a route to see how carriers operate?
Yes, it's a critical part of those programs. Understanding and seeing what happens on a daily basis behind the curtain is really foundational to understanding how you can positively impact that. We have a very simple goal here in HR. Our job is to improve the employee experience, period. We believe that the great customer experience starts with a great employee experience, and I tell my team, you can't do that if you don't understand what they're going through on a daily basis, whether it's safety, actually understanding what it's like to walk a route and not necessarily know where that dog might come from or what other hazards might be on that route, or if you're working in a facility, the demands of unloading trailers at 2 o'clock in the morning. Not understanding that, seeing it and appreciating it doesn't allow us to do our job as effectively as we can. So those rotations, those observations, not just in the initial programs, but throughout your career, is absolutely critical to being effective in these jobs.
And how much vertical space is there for someone coming in at the bottom? In other words, if a carrier decides, I want to be management, I think I could really help here with vehicle acquisition or whatever the case might be, sorting equipment acquisition, Can they do that, and do they do that?
Well, I will just say this. Three of our last three Postmaster Generals and CEOs started at the very front of the very front line of the organization. So, yes, that is one of the selling points. You can come into this organization, and from an operation standpoint, sky's the limit. From a career standpoint, sky's the limit. It really is about where you want to go and what you want to do. And then, obviously, you know, stepping in and succeeding in those roles when you're given those opportunities. But we have thousands of frontline supervisor positions, which is that first step from a craft position into management. And again, you see people who come in, they do a great job, learn the business, and they move very, very quickly.
Jeff Williamson is Chief Human Resources Officer at the Postal Service. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.